esteemed and lovely and talented Hub Arkish.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
An experienced NFL reporter with decades of experience.
670 The Score's NFL insider.
Hub is excellent at his job and should be on TV somewhere because he doesn't have a face for radio, but that's for another time.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
Very quick break here, and then we're back with your phone calls.
Okay, apparently we're not going to a break. I apologize for that. I guess I missed the... See, now I missed the signal, too. I hope I don't get fired today. Actually, I'm probably a little safer than that is now that I think about it.
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com. It's Mac and Parkins live at the United Center ahead of LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the Lakers being in town to take on the Bulls, which, of course, you could hear right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And you can hear Hub before every game on the Sportsbook at Ameristar pregame show with Olin and Pat Manley. Visit Ameristar's new sportsbook in East Chicago. Hub is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, and we appreciate his time each and every Tuesday at 4 o'clock. Hey, Hub.
How you doing, guys?
We're doing outstanding, Hub. We've managed to keep it pretty much Bears-free the first couple hours of the show, and it's been nice, actually, to tell you the
truth. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it has been a nice break, but back to reality and back to the Bears as they try to regroup and make something of this, and your thoughts on what Matt Nagy can salvage with half this football season still in front of him.
You know, guys, it's funny because I got up feeling a little down this morning, and then I heard AD talking about how great it was to be back in the mecca of basketball and how he might want to be here permanently, and I got all jacked up. So, you know, I can understand why things are better at the UC today. I don't think things are as bad at Hallis Hall as everybody believes they are. Obviously, everybody's miserable with a four-game losing streak. Obviously, this team has, you know, dramatically underperformed, but it doesn't wipe out, you know, what they did last year. And so we know that there is still some talent here. There are definitely some pieces to work with. You've got half a football season left to play. And you know, one win does some strange things. I mean, the Los Angeles Chargers came in here a couple weeks ago, 2-5. They got lucky. Now they've got an impressive win over the Packers, and they're 4-5, and we're taking them seriously. I'm not suggesting that the Bears are going to get back in the race. They're not. They're not playing well enough this year to do that. But there's a ton to accomplish the second half. Some of it is finding that buzz and that mojo on defense. Some of it is still trying to figure out what more Mitch Trubisky can do, because even if he's never going to be a franchise guy, there's obviously more than this. And it's an important learning curve for Matt Nagy, because he's going to be back next year, guys. Nothing's going to change that. He should be back next year, but he's had a rough sophomore slump. He's in a particularly bad streak right now, these last four, and he's got to figure out, you know, ways to fix these things when they happen.
I saw you posted something at Pro Football Weekly, a column on specific things that you want to see over the next eight games. What are some of those things?
Well, I think that you've got to acknowledge, you know, the difference between where things just aren't working right now and where things are unlikely to work in the future. And so I start at tight end. It is the weakest position on the team. It is a team, I don't want to say that we badly overestimated it, because, you know, we didn't know what to make of Adam Shaheen, but we certainly expected more from Trey Burton. And I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, tight end is not quarterback. I think, you know, quarterbacks just, there's more to do. They require more patience. There's more that goes into it. It shouldn't take 2.5, 3 seasons to figure out if a guy can play tight end in the NFL or not. And I think at this point we have to assume that Adam Shaheen can't. And so you've got Dax Raymond on the practice squad. He was one of the most important priority free agents out there that went undrafted at any position. And I know he went on IR originally with a concussion, but he's on the practice squad now. And I would absolutely get him activated and find out what he can do. I'd also like to see a lot more of J.P. Holtz. Adam Shaheen's a nice kid, but I'm not so sure you shouldn't move on. If you don't want to release him, find a way to get him to IR, but clear those reps for somebody else. Find out what you can do. You've got the same situation at running back. Mike Davis was a really strange signing when they made it. There are a lot of reports out there. I get worried because nobody really knows what the mystery formula for compensatory picks are, but we have some ideas. And it appears that if the Bears were to release Davis between now and Saturday, they'd have a much better chance of getting a compensatory pick in next spring's draft, possibly as high as the fourth round. So I think you got to cut that cord, and I would activate both Kareth White and Ryan Nolan. Find out what you've got there. You know, Tariq Cohen has now said himself he's not really a running back. Obviously, you still have to take advantage of his skills and find ways to use him, but it's not as a pure running back. So I think you take a look at the other player possibilities you've got at that position. And the last piece, guys, is, you know, Alex Bars was drafted to be a guard. That's probably what he's going to be. But he did play some tackle at Notre Dame. He was forced to play left tackle at the end of the exhibition season when they had those injuries. I'd put him out there. I'd let Charles Leno at least sit down and watch for a while, because he is killing you right now. And if you don't want to do that, then maybe give Cornelius Lucas a chance. He had an awful preseason as well. But you address these positions where you're not getting enough production, and at 3-5, you got nothing to lose. So put these guys out there and find out if you do have better options, or if these are the areas you got to focus in as soon as the offseason comes around.
I agree with you 100% on tight end being the biggest blemish on the roster. And whether it's the drafting of Shaheen or the free agent signing with Burton, they've both been colossal, conclusive failures. How do you know, though, Hub? How do you determine whether it's an absence of talent or an absence of development?
Well, there are two different stories there, Mac. I don't know if I agree that Burton is a colossal failure. He was actually pretty good last year and is still very well respected around the league. Now, what this mystery, I don't want to say that, what this groin injury is, I don't know. We've continued to hear that he's not 100%, but he clearly hasn't been the same player that he was a year ago. So with him, I think you keep working at it, you try and figure it out. But with Adam Shaheen, at some point you got to stop and say, you know what, you can occasionally find a gem at Ashland College in what used to be Division III football, but far more often than not, there's a reason these guys were there in the first place. And it was pretty obvious to me the day he arrived in Bourbonnais as a rookie that while he has great size and he has nice athleticism and decent speed, none of it is unusual at the NFL level. It was extremely unusual at Ashland. It might have been unusual at an FBS school, but it just isn't in the NFL. He to me, in 2.5 years, I haven't seen anything to suggest that the ability is there to do special things, you know. And again, we talked about this, I think, last week. We've talked about it a few times. When you look at the two other teams that are running this offense successfully, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles, one thing they have in common is that the Chiefs have the best tight end in the AFC right now, and the Eagles have the best tight end in the NFC right now. And so you got to find a way to get better there. And it just, I don't see anything in Adam Shaheen that sparks images of Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz.
Hub, everyone is making sweeping judgments on Matt Nagy, but I wonder how we grade him, given that his offense is clearly not being deployed how he wants it, right? He doesn't have a quarterback up to snuff. He doesn't have a line up to snuff. You just mentioned the tight end. How do you separate the lack of personnel with the lack of production from his offense when evaluating whether or not he's doing a good job?
Well, you know, Danny, he's not doing a good job right now, certainly not in the last 4 weeks. But when you say sweeping judgments, and I agree with you, there's just too much of that out there. And I hear all this silliness. You've got to go get rid of them. You know, guys want to call them names and this and that. You look at the entire body of work. And right now, as a young head coach with a year and a half under his belt, he's 15-10, which is an exceptional record for a young coach with a year and a half under his belt. You don't throw out the good from last year because of the bad you've seen the last few weeks. And so I think he's almost like a young quarterback. He's in a learning curve right now. And, you know, when he runs the ball only 7 times against the New Orleans Saints, you can get upset about that. That is obviously, that's a huge blunder that no good coach should make. But even the good ones, you know, get to screw up once in a while. When you look at the bigger picture, he has reacted when we've seen problems. He responded to that by coming back and running the ball, 30-some times, and it worked, you know. And so I think it is a combination of he is being probably a little stubborn in certain things, and he probably doesn't have all of the tools he needs in his box to have this offense be successful.
I've described him as stubborn as well. But he's going to be here, like you said. And Ryan Pace is going to be here. But I think the idea that Ryan Pace is going to be the guy most responsible for making the decision on who the next quarterback is, whether it's a draftee, a trade, or a free agent, that scares the hell out of people. Hub, I don't know if it's ever been done where a front office is structured in that one guy has more of a voice in the defense, somebody else has a stronger voice with the offense, but I sure would favor it with Ryan Pace because defensively he's been very good. Offensively, he's missed way more than he's hit.
Well, Mac, I think historically, and when you look at the really successful teams, the personnel department, the coaching staffs have to be completely separate. And the personnel department, is responsible for all the talent on both sides of the ball. I do understand what you're saying here, but I don't know that I even totally agree on offense. I think Japes Daniels, Cody Whitehair, Tariq Cohn, maybe David Montgomery, still maybe Anthony Miller, certainly Allen Robinson. He's done plenty of good things on offense, but you're right. I mean, he made a galactic miss at quarterback. And listen, this is one of those rare times where most of us can say we didn't understand it at the time. I mean, I was live on the air a half hour before the pick screaming, it's got to be Deshaun Watson. And what's interesting, I think, in response to what you're suggesting here, though, is that there will be a difference this time, assuming that they make changes there. And it's a safe assumption, but again, I want to see the second half of the season before I hold any going away parties for Mitch Trubisky, because I do think he's going to be here next year. But whatever they do in terms of bringing out additional talent at quarterback, you have Matt Nagy here now. And you got to remember, when Mitch Trubisky was drafted by the Bears, Nagy was in Kansas City, and they were taking Patrick Mahomes ahead of Deshaun Watson, which at this point I think you'd probably be happy with either one. You know, that some people may still prefer Mahomes. I still prefer Watson. Certainly, Ryan Pace is a really smart guy, and he doesn't have a lot of ego about this. I'm not pretending we're best friends, but I've gotten to spend enough time with Ryan over the last 5 years to have a sense of who he is. And when they address the quarterback position after the season, they are going to have Nagy's voice in it. And, prior to getting here and inheriting what he's got, he's been around some good quarterbacks and helped develop. He was pivotal all those years in Philadelphia with the quarterbacks there. He certainly was pivotal in Kansas City, with Mahomes and with Alex Smith. Now, he is the reason that Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray are here, but those aren't epic fails. I mean, that's a backup who should never be a starter. And I didn't realize this until I was looking at this last night. Tyler Bray is only 27 years old. He's not going to be 28 until the end of December, even though he's been around the league for 7 years now. And the one thing I absolutely would do if things don't get better is I think you got to give him a start. I don't know how you keep this guy around for 7 years and never put him on the field. So I don't even know that that is that horrible a failure. So I think going forward, the concerns about Ryan getting another crack at quarterback, he's going to have much better assistance this time with Matt Nagy working with him on that.
Hub, I thought I was the president of the Deshaun Watson fan club, but not even I would say that I would take him over Pat Mahomes. Why do you like Watson more than Mahomes?
I love them both, Danny, but I think right now, I know a lot of people are on the Russell Wilson bandwagon, but if they win without J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson is going to be this year's MVP. Mahomes was last year's MVP. I think Watson does more things. I think, Patrick Mahomes, the only quarterback I've ever seen who I would compare the arm talent to is Brett Favre. And so that's extremely rare air. But Deshaun Watson is a much better athlete than Patrick Mahomes, and he is much more dangerous, not only moving in the pocket, but coming out of the pocket. And when you see the trend around the league right now, you see what Lamar Jackson is doing. Stylistically, you're going to get a lot closer to that with Watson than you are Mahomes. So believe me, I'd be thrilled to have either one of them. But if I had to pick one today, I'd probably still take Watson.
Wow. I mean, listen, I think that they are going to be the two faces of the NFL for the next 15 years, torturing Bears fans all along the way. The physical tools of Mahomes, and yeah, he's got Reed and he's got those playmakers, but I've never seen a quarterback like it.
Well, Danny, you're right, but I mean, what I laugh about sometimes when I hear the amateurs talking about Mitch's mechanics and his footwork and all that, Patrick Mahomes' mechanics and footwork are awful. he makes throws you should never make, and he gets away with them in part because of that unbelievable arm. But he's also had some pretty good luck. And then I watched Deshaun Watson, and this kid looks to me like he was built in a laboratory to be today's prototypical NFL quarterback. So, again, I would be thrilled with either one of them. And if I had one, I probably wouldn't trade for the other. But if I was starting from scratch and I had to pick, I'd probably still go with Watson.
Hub, which winner this weekend, going back to Thursday night, impressive win for the 49ers, which team made the biggest statement to you?
Well, that's a great question. You know, the Ravens obviously made a huge statement, but I don't want to get carried away there because there's still a lot of flaws in that team, and there's a lot of ways to attack that defense. And I don't think the Ravens want to have to go to Foxborough in January. But they did make a huge statement. There's no question about that. The 49ers made their statement a couple of weeks ago. I mean, they're supposed to beat Arizona, and they went in there and struggled. And then you had a bunch of losers, actually. I mean, you know, the Packers and the Vikings were hot teams, and they got beat. The Colts, you know, they missed on a field goal. The Houston Texans – I don't believe I wrote them off last week when I heard J.J. Watt was done. And I know that to me, you got to throw out these London games because the circumstances are just so different from everything else. But for them to go out there and for that defensive line to play the way they did, the pressure Minshew the way they did with a bunch of guys I've never heard of, quite frankly, other than Whitney Merciless, I thought they made a pretty strong statement. I think that, you know, don't sleep on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're back to 4-4. And that defense is really interesting right now. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick has been a great acquisition, and Mason Rudolph you like, and he's back fairly solid now. So, you know, I think it was more the middle of the pack teams that kind of made statements. If I had to pick one team, though, I guess you got to come back to the Ravens because they got the biggest win, and I guess you can't ignore the Chiefs because, you know, they had to snap a 3-game losing streak at home. Matt Moore has not been the reason for those losses. They've still got a lot of problems on defense. I just don't think that team is good enough to get to the Super Bowl, but that was a really good, really hot Minnesota team they beat. So that was a pretty impressive statement that at least they're in it well into January, if not ready to go all the way.
That's a lot of statements from one weekend of football. Hub, we will be listening to you with Dan and Connor throughout the week, and then, of course, with Bears pre and post. Thank you, as always, for the time.
Thanks, Hub.
All right, guys. Have fun out there tonight.
You betcha.
Thank you. Out there is where we are right now, which is the United Center ahead of Bulls and Lakers. Old friend from Score family, once a Score guy, always a Score guy, and now the host of the Bulls pre- and post-game show on NBC Sports Chicago, Jason Goff, going to hang out and talk some Bulls with us coming up on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Ryan Pace is the general manager of the Chicago Bears. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Right. And I want to say thank you, too. I don't know how good or bad any of these players are because I don't really know who many of them are. But for our purposes, for people who do what we do and that has spent a ridiculous amount of time talking about the Chicago Bears, the characters involved and the drama of all this is great for us. So thanks.
No doubt. I'm excited to talk about these guys.
All right. So let's talk about Mitch Trubisky here. You know that you have stapled yourself to this quarterback for better or for worse, and we will be talking about it for the next couple of years.
I hear you, man. I'm all in.
Well, stapled. Ow, and it hurts.
I gotta be honest, I had forgotten that it was Jason Goff who got Ryan Pace to say, I'm all in. And now, because it's sports radio, we use that against him all the time. Jason Goff is here on 670 The Score with Mac and Parkins at the United Center. And I will say, everyone is congratulating you for all of your successes, which they should be. The
new
pre and post host of the Bulls on NBC Sports Chicago. But I want to congratulate you for being done with the Bears, man. Oh, get the Bears out of your life.
But that's the thing. By the way, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
How's everything? Good to see you, bud.
Good to be seen, brother. That's the thing. I'm not done with them because this was the first year. You know, I've...
I've been doing this, whatever this is,
yeah,
since I was 20 years old, and as a listener since I was 12, 13, right? So since 2001, 2000, you know, we fight this battle, especially in terrestrial radio and local radio, of can't be a homer, can't be a hater. So subconsciously, you're constantly fighting that and proving yourself every day, like, oh, I'm not a homer. Look, I can point out this person's deficiencies. Or I'm not a hater. Look, I like this guy. So for the first time since 01, I got a chance with the ESPN gig to be like, you know what? I could be full meatball fan. And this is what I was greeted with this year. Like, this is, so for the first time since 01, this is what I've been greeted with, hey, you know what? Let's mess around, throw things at the TV, make all the couch noises, not have to watch these games two or three times over because somebody wants to talk about it. My child is watching games with me. He's walking away in the first quarter. Like, the golf household is upside down right now because of these Bears. But what are you going to do, right?
Well, thankfully, Jason, we have this building's tenants, the Bulls and Blackhawks, to take our minds off of our Bears' troubles. The Bulls.
Hey, Mac.
Yeah. Hi, Mac.
Hey, dude.
A team that was that lost to the Hornets and to the Knicks and to the Cavaliers.
Yeah,
and
the Raptors.
Giving up 112 points, 114 a night.
Don't forget the Pacers. That was bad, too. Listen, the first 10 games, Will, Kendall, and I talked about it on the season preview show, how important these first 10 games were. If you're talking playoffs, then those first 10 games are very important. And high side, I was like, man, if they can go 6-4, because you got the Lakers, you got the Rockets, you got the Raptors. So those are three teams who are championship contenders, one coming off a championship. It's going to be tough to beat those teams. But put up a good fight, take an L to those teams. I'm not mad at you. But you got to scrape the Knicks. You got to scrape the undermanned Pacers. The Pacers had three of the best four players down. The Cavs pushed you around. Colin Sexton dunking on your best player, your best big man, who is Wendell Carter Jr. Those things, like, and then you come out with preparedness, weakness, mentally, physically. Like, these are statements from the coach.
Yep.
So this start has been very revealing for any Bulls fan and anyone who thought that this team had taken that step in September because of the practice habits and everyone being at the Advocate Center. They got some work to do because they dug themselves an early hole that I did not see them being in at this point. I thought maybe the season would catch up with them. They'd catch some eyes around the NBA. A lot of people were talking about the Bulls around the NBA as being maybe around that eighth or seventh seed. But these first seven games, just inconsistencies, not picking up the schemes. I don't know if that's the case. Whatever the case may be, it hasn't resulted in wins. And we now got the Lakers coming in here tonight, which isn't going to be an easy task at all.
No, that's going to get ugly. And I wonder, you said you're balancing the homer and the hater thing when you were doing local radio.
Yeah.
I've been watching these post-game shows, man, and you haven't been pulling any punches, but post-game's a different thing, and
yeah,
there's obviously the affiliation there. What's the balancing act between being critical and honest and fair with a Bulls team that, like you said, let's make no bones about it, they said they were going to be a playoff team, and they're underperforming?
Yeah, well, I mean, Kevin Cross over at NBC Sports Chicago has entrusted me with the responsibility of he trusts me. Like, this is, you get your thoughts out to the people unabashed. When they're good, talk about how good they are. When they aren't playing well, you talk about how they're not playing well. It's a simple business that we're in. I mean, if you got bosses who trust you and know what your vibe is and know that you're not going to be personal on any level, because there's no room for that on a post-game show.
Right.
Like, we're in and out with highlights. We're talking about breakdowns. Will's got breakdowns. Kendall's got breakdowns. So spliced in between there, you give a little bit of your personal thought. And I feel like I've gained the trust of people in this city when it comes to basketball. So they know I'm not coming from a place of, oh, well, I don't like this guy, so I'm gonna say a great game was a bad game. No, I tell it like it is. And I also talk to the people around the organization to try to figure out what they are trying to do so that I am more informed on things when I bring it to the airways. Like, there are off-the-record conversations, on-the-record conversations about what the Bulls' schemes are, what they're trying to do. So when I see them do that, when I see them execute those schemes in a couple of games that we've seen, you know, you highlight that. When those schemes go haywire, or when a player is benched in the two fourth quarters in a row like Lowry was, it'd be a shame not to bring that up, you know?
So the Lowry being benched is a huge story. The defense being bad is a huge story. But the one that I've been maybe the most surprised about is Satoransky and their expectations of point guard. Because the last couple of years, I've been big on talking on the show about how it's a point guard league.
Yeah.
And they've had bottom three point guard play in the NBA the last couple of years. Yeah. And I didn't think Satoransky was going to be top five, not even top 10.
I thought he was going to be better than this.
League average.
Yeah.
And I thought that he would be more aggressive and that it would allow Zach and Lowry to play off of him and not have to create for themselves all the time. Why isn't it working?
Yeah, that's a question for Jim Boylan. Why isn't it working with Tomas Satoransky or the point guard position, period?
I expected Satoransky to be the guy who would solve it, White's obviously not ready to be an NBA point guard if he ever will be.
Yeah, I expected him to be better. I also think that when you throw all that responsibility on a guy coming in from a new system to a new system, and also check out the guys who played in the FIBA World Cup this summer. Those guys are logging heavy minutes during summer competition and then asked to get ready for a training camp and then asked to get ready for an NBA season. Marc Gasol, like a lot of guys around the league who performed in that, who got heavy minutes for their countries, have been on load management very early in the season. I think with Tomas Satoransky, he's still trying to find his way because he's a decent enough spot-up shooter. This is the other thing. The Bulls just haven't hit shots too, man.
Yep.
Like, if you're not going to guard people, you can't also not hit shots. And they've missed a lot of shots and their defense has suffered because they're a young team. So they've taken their offensive side of the game to the defensive side. I think that's happened with Tomas. I think he's played defense pretty well, but he hasn't hit enough shots to warrant keeping him out there on the court. The problem is, are you going to ask Chris Dunn to be out there in a three-guard lineup where if he doesn't have the ball, he's going to be off the ball and he's not a shot maker? So it hamstrings you. And on top of it, you're running a lot of three-guard lineups. So Chad Hutchinson and these guys that are behind, or Otto Porter, have to be ready and have to be healthy. Chad just got healthy. Don't know if Denzel is going to see the floor. So their lineup right now, they're trying to figure things out on top of the expectations that they presented to everybody, which is tough. You know, and you know what? To be honest with you, this is the NBA. You're going to be put in tough positions. You're a professional athlete. So in the end, if you're going to be put in tough positions, who's going to answer the bell? So far, I think Wendell Carter Jr. has answered the bell more games than not. I think Zach LaVine, when he is aggressive in the first quarter, you see the stats, this team is a different team. If he's not aggressive in the first quarter, if he's not looking for his shot in the first quarter, this team has a floating ability of trying to find out who's going to score. And what I'm worried about is I don't want them to be a next shot team, which it seems like they're trending towards. I want them to be a next stop team. No matter what happens on the offensive end, you gotta be ready to play some defense on somebody. And pace of play is different now. So all those possessions that you're giving up via turnover and lack of rebounding, like their margin for error is really small. So the backcourt has to rebound better. Tomas Satoransky's got to hit more shots. Kobe White has to have somebody around him who can also score on that second unit. So there's a jigsaw puzzle right now that they're putting together in front of everybody. But this isn't training camp, so it's happening in losses.
Yes,
that makes
sense. That absence of defense is something I wanted to address with you, and maybe this is a Jim Boylan question too, but game day he couldn't stop by. He got a game tonight, so you be Jim Boylan for me.
Oh, goody.
He's critical of their effort.
Punch the clock.
And Danny and I were talking about this earlier in the show. Lauri Markkanen's going to make millions and millions of dollars for many years, and Zach LaVine is going to make a lot of money. What convinces you there is a want to with those two players to get to the next level?
Me and this guy right here fought about Lauri Markkanen before I left. Remember the conversations we had?
I do.
About Lauri Markkanen? So,
I do.
So I got Mitch and Lauri Markkanen. I got two wins so far.
Yeah. All right?
No, but
yeah. The, I'm waiting for my first.
Do they possess that want to be great all-around players or just get wealthy?
When you get benched, sometimes people are looking forward to you not being happy about getting benched. And we'll see. We'll see how he responds. I asked the guys in the green room the other day, like, street fight time, because some of these games have turned into sheer street fights in the fourth quarter. Street fight time, how many times are you going to get punched, right? Like, Colin Sexton back cutting Zach LaVine and dunking on Wendell Carter Jr., who had to make up for somebody's defensive inadequacies. That's like a microcosm of the season so far for me, because that's a second year dog point guard. Like, Colin Sexton may not be as talented
In terms of a score or a shooter as everybody else, but he is a dog. He is going after you for 35 minutes, no matter if he's hitting every shot or missing every shot. You need guys like that on your team. And they got a lot of pros. They got a lot of really nice guys and a lot of really good guys who follow what Jim Boylan is trying to teach them. But in the end, like, who's the guy that's going to be upset enough that nobody eats postgame? Like, who's, and I'm not, you know, I'm not, we don't have to get into, like, who's flipping over tables, but who's going to look at everybody and
a
say.
A 20-year-old.
Yeah, Wendell
right,
Carter,
right now,
man.
He looks like the only guy who seems to be willing, right?
Yes. They're very, very, that's very short and sweet. After the Cleveland game, when Wendell, I think it meant a lot to anybody who was looking, because in those losing moments, like, everybody's blueprint is cool when you're winning. Right? When everybody's winning, everybody's feeling good. But in those losing moments, you kind of find out who everybody is. When Wendell Carter said after that Cleveland game, you know, we need to stop talking about all-star bursts. We need to stop talking about playoffs. We need to get wins.
No, no.
When a 20-year-old out of Duke who hasn't done a lot of losing in his life, period, gets tossed into a situation where, oh, it's 82 games. There's certain guys who don't look at it as it's just 82 games. It's we lost one tonight or we lost one the other night. I think Wendell Carter is built. I think he's cut from that cloth. Other guys are going to have to, like, be uncomfortable enough to either get there or be found out. And I think Zach LaVine is a guy who last year, everything that happened last year, and Zach not being voted team captain this year by his teammates, like, that says something to me. And when Wendell Carter Jr. is saying these things, and Otto Porter Jr. and Thad Young, who got here like an hour ago, are voted team captains, maybe you guys start taking a look around and say, all right, you know, if every roommate you have is the bad roommate, like, maybe you're the bad roommate, you know? And I think that's where guys have to start checking themselves. And I think this is a you know, a check-yourself game, because the nation's going to be watching. Everywhere LeBron goes, the nation watches. And if they can get it up for the Lakers, I want that same energy against the Hawks tomorrow and against the Rockets on Saturday. Like, that's the difference between being a regular team and regular really good players and being exceptional players. And I think those guys still have to take those steps in Lowry and Zach, because there's no Robin Lopez. There's nobody else around this thing to be like, okay, you don't have the team. It's your team. I don't care who was voted captain. I don't care who is out there addressing the crowd on opening night. It's Zach and Lowry's team. And as far as they go, that team will go. When Lowry scores 37 in Charlotte, you're like, yo.
That was a great game, man, for him.
This is the problem. He had 38 against Cleveland last year, similarly.
Yep.
Right? So you got to string those together. I'm not saying 37 every game. Nobody's going to do that. But, you know, I don't want to see your first seven shots being threes and your first two coming with your eighth shot like it was a couple of games ago. Like, he's got – and when your coach is testing you, not only with minutes but also saying things publicly – at some point, you gotta answer that bell. I think Lowry's talented. I think he is. I think he's a very gifted and skilled big man. I just think he's trying to find himself in his second or third different offense in 3 years as well.
He's Jason Goff, the Bulls pre and post host at NBC Sports Chicago. Thanks for coming by, man. Even if I'm always wrong. When
no,
I talk
you're not always
you,
wrong. No, 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 no.
I enjoy
no.
talking.
You're not always
with you,
wrong.
Man.
No, you're not always wrong. I just got that. You know what? I don't even have that one. I got the Mitch one.
You got
it. Yeah, I got the Mitch one, but I don't even have that one. Thank you guys for having me, man.
Thanks for being here. And those of you who watch Jason tonight, if you have a beard, take notes. That's how you.
Yeah.
Keep it tight.
Keep it
looks
tight.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
That's how you wear a beard.
Yeah, keep the eucalyptus popping off so it's nice and moist enough.
That's
you know
nice.
What I mean? Yeah, don't make sure no crumbs are in your joint. You know what I mean? You got to make sure it smells good, because a lot of stinky beards out here. A lot of guys come in for that dap and hug, and you're like, fam, you got to back up a little bit. Not talking about you, Shane. You look good, and you smell good.
I think you were looking right at him when you said it, though.
Yeah, I was talking about Shane.
Yeah, you were talking about Shane. It's Jason.
No. I'm just playing. Shane's a good smelling man. Give Shane a sniff if you're out here at gate 109, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Come on over. You start.
He's Jason Goff, NBC Sports
right,
Chicago,
boys.
The Big Ten Channel on Sirius with Anthony Herron, ESPN Radio, the man with many jobs, once a score guy, always a score guy. Thanks, Jay. We appreciate
you,
man. We have Bill Weddington stopping by at 5. It's Mac and Parkins on the score.
AC/DC's second frontman, Brian Johnson, celebrated a birthday 72, 1 month ago today on the Ish Show. We recognize it a little bit after the fact because that's how we roll.
Yeah, we'll get to it eventually, either on that day or 1 month after the day.
Perfect for today, though, because we're in the United Center, and I've seen AC/DC in this building a time or two, Danny Parkins.
Oh, good for you. And it's the 25-year and one-day anniversary of the United Center.
Exactly. I think we should come back like a month before it turns 26 or a month after it turns 26 and recognize it. Yeah, but the birthday blotter has not been exactly rich lately, so more than happy to take one from the phenom today, a suggestion from a month ago's birthday of Brian Johnson.
That's perfect.
He is the phenom!
Sean Anderson, the phenom, just ask him. But yeah, it's good. You are in a, you know, we'll celebrate these birthdays whenever we can. AC/DC, where are they in your rock or power ranking?
Probably somewhere around 6th or 7th.
There you go.
Great weight room band. I don't take them overly seriously, but every time I've seen them, I have had a great time. And this is a great example, Brian Johnson, a great example of why Howard Stern is the king. You, as a guy who doesn't care much about music and probably not AC/DC, I've never heard you express any fondness for them whatsoever.
Well, I was mad a month ago that we didn't celebrate Brian Johnson's 72nd birthday on the day, but you didn't want to do it. Right. You were too sportsy.
His interview with Brian Johnson is the reason he's the best. I mean, he will keep people who don't have an interest in a particular person and get them to listen for long stretches of time. His Brian Johnson interview probably in my top 10.
Of top 10 Stern interviews.
Yes, and I am a huge fan of AC/DC's as well. I think they should do a movie about AC/DC. It's a band that survived the death of its original frontman, and they were left for dead and considering packing it up. And 6 months later, they had their highest selling album, which was in the top 5 albums in record sales in the history of rock and roll, Back in Black. Their first effort with him.
Speaking of Stern, Jim Brewer doing Brian Johnson doing Sam Kinison on Howard Stern, one of my favorite clips, if you have time.
Brewer's Brian Johnson is awesome. When he does what it would sound like if AC/DC did the Hokey Pokey.
Yeah.
Laugh! Put your laugh at me! Oh, it's outstanding.
You guys are pulling Stern clips that I do not know. I am not familiar with either of those things. I will go into the archives tonight.
Yeah.
I feel bad if I can't keep up in a Stern conversation. That's terrible.
That's rare. That's very rare.
Artie making a comeback, by the way. 9 months sober. I listened to him on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Sober from substances, gambling, prostitution.
He said in the interview, "I love gambling," but he also said he loves heroin. So I don't know what that means necessarily. But yeah,
he had a great line, Mac. He said, "If you know, one vice kind of begets another one." He said, "If he made a $5 bet, he'd eventually be running guns to Cuba." I thought that was a great line.
Oh, that is a funny line. You know, I consider myself fortunate to not have those same behavioral issues with wagering I have with other things.
Yeah, but he was referring mostly to cocaine and heroin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that can knock you out for the rest of, in one night, probably not a good idea, I would think.
But he's still, man, his comedic timing and his storytelling.
Oh, he's great.
Is absolutely spectacular. I've had him on the show once, and it was amazing. But he was talking about it, like talk about a tortured artist.
Yeah.
He's like, what I struggle with is these stories are what people come to me for. And then I tell the stories on stage, and I put them in books, and it makes me all of this money. But I don't want to be doing heroin and cocaine anymore. But heroin and cocaine are the things that lead me to the great stories. So it was a really interesting place that you could tell that his head was in.
How old is he now, Artie?
Oh,
60-ish?
Probably, yeah. I was going to say 55. I would guess somewhere in there. But
looks a little older than he actually is.
Oh,
some hard miles.
Oh, yeah. Hard miles, to say the least. Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youth-hockey to learn how to get your team to the ice to play during an intermission of a Wolves game. We are winners. We are the Wolves. The segment also brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Yeah, his nose that has been collapsed, he says he doesn't want to get it fixed because every day he looks in the mirror, it's a reminder of what's happened to him.
He lost all the tissue between nostrils, right?
Yeah, but it's like more than a deviated septum. It's like a totally collapsed nasal cavity and all of that. Got it because a stripper that he would fly in to be with him on the road to do drugs, when he was she was called down to the lobby to pick up something at a hotel in St. Louis, and she had taken a glass salt shaker, crushed Oxycontin on the table, put it in lines, but also broke the salt shaker. And so when he got out of the shower, did the line of Oxycontin with shards of glass in it,
and kept doing it after he knew something was up with it, right?
Yeah, well, he finished the lines. Yeah, he's rough, man. But it's a hell of a story. It would probably make another New York Times number one bestseller.
Never quite understood that thing about hookers and cocaine. It's like they don't go in the same room for many of us.
For many.
If I remember correctly.
Artie's, I guess, an overachiever in that way. Bill Wennington has some stories, probably of a different variety. But Bill Wennington joins us next in person on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.